One Talmudic story describes a major debate that took place in the academy between one rabbi, Rabbi Eliezer, and his colleagues. And Rabbi Eliezer, the minority opinion, claims, "I am right." And to prove his point, he says, well, what he starts doing is alluding to miraculous events. "If I am right, may this tree prove it." And the tree moves a few yards. It gets up and, right, moves. To which the rabbi say, "Well, we all know you can't bring a legal proof from a tree, right? And if I am correct, let this water aqueduct prove it." And the water starts flowing upstream. And they say, "Well, we know you can't bring proof from a water aqueduct." And the story goes on and goes on until a voice comes out of the heavens and says, "What do you want with Rabbi Eliezer? I accept his halakha, clearly an emanation from God." To which his opposition, Rabbi Joshua, rebukes the voice for interfering in what is a purely human endeavor. And he declares, "It is not in the heavens, literally, to God, but out." This story is very important because it stresses a major underpinning of rabbinic self-definition. The Torah was given at Sinai, no strings attached. And when I say strings, I mean no strings still attaching it to the giver. It was the ultimate gift, because the ultimate gift is one in which the giver severs all ties and all claims on that gift that was given. If I give you a gift, it is yours henceforth to do with as you see fit. And that was the underlying premise of halakha. And the rabbis tell beautiful stories to make that point clear, that we control Torah. For instance, we control the calendar. It is the rabbis that decide when the new moon should be declared or when Rosh Hashanah, the day of judgment, should be proclaimed. And they tell an interesting story that on the eve of the day of judgment of Rosh Hashanah, the celestial entourage, God and his angels, are setting up the court that is going to deal with all of humankind. They're opening the tables, they're opening the books, and this great trial is going to take place. And then the rabbis down below decide to add a 30th day to the previous month. In other words, they're pushing off Rosh Hashanah by one day, and God tells the angels, "Fold everything up. We can't do it. We haven't received the green light from down below when it is Rosh Hashanah." The irony is beautiful here. And that is that once the calendar was given to human beings to decide, even God himself can't interfere. There's a cute little story about a rabbi walking in a valley on what is about to be the day of the new moon. And according to rabbinic tradition, you cannot see the old moon for a full day before the new moon and the new month is proclaimed. And here's this rabbi walking in a valley, and suddenly he sees last month's moon in the sky. And he looks at it and he says, "Fool, don't you know we decided to proclaim a new moon this evening?" And the moon immediately recedes. It knows it's not allowed to appear because the rabbis have decided. And of course, the rabbis knew exactly what the message was, that we control the legal, all aspects of the legal components of Judaism. Now, many people have interpreted the story negating revelation in the rabbinic academy as a response to Christianity's perceived reliance on a renewed revelation as a source for abrogating the legal components of the Hebrew Bible. So it could be that that story was also told with an intended audience out there. In other words, this is our response to the claim of a more recent revelation after Sinai. The sages were also aware of new realities that required attention, even if there was no obvious allusion to these problems in the written Torah. And procedures taken by legal authorities as a corrective to some new development appear throughout rabbinic tradition. Usually they would be imposed to alleviate some unforeseen hardship. For instance, we noted in our fourth lecture that Yochanan ben Zakkai declared a number of enactments in the aftermath of the destruction of the temple, simply to fill the void that was created. We alluded in an earlier lecture to another example of an ordinance that's not really a legal stipulation, the ordinance that prevented people from taking more, that prevented men from taking more than one wife. And it was an ordinance instituted by a rabbi known as Rabbeinu Gershom. He comes from Mayence and the end of the 10th century, beginning of the 11th century. But because this was only an ordinance, it was only recognized by those Jews who considered him to be their authority. In this particular case, Ashkenazi Jews of Germany, of Western Europe, and not Jews of the East.